Just to proceed with the bill itself, we've had a lot of extensive consultations and within government on this bill. I think, as you may appreciate, as the members may appreciate, the nature of the intervention is quite complex and is quite extensive. So we've had to move a lot slower on this bill than with the other previous bills and other SOEs. And but finally in April, at the same time as with the South African Express bill, we did get cabinet approval to proceed with the transfer of the FSN to Infraco and for government to then acquire the shareholding in Infraco. As I explained earlier, the structure that we followed is we're taking an existing Eskom subsidiary and we're transferring the entire FSN of both Eskom and Transnet into that subsidiary. And what government then will do is acquire the shareholding of that subsidiary and then make it a standalone SOE. This was also to help expedite the process, particularly taking into cognizance the fact that we would be leasing the infrastructure to Neotel and that they have pressures to launch their services quite quickly. And so this is what Cabinet then approved, that's the establishment of Infraco as an SOE, and that then we proceed with the legislative process of the bill. And the bill, again, together with the SAX bill, was published on 11 May in the Government Gazette. And with both bills basically have been dealt with together. So you'll see that references to Cabinet will, on SAX will also apply to Infraco in some instances. And essentially, the purpose of the bill is for government, as I've stated, to acquire the Infraco shares and then for the FSN to be transferred, so we are giving legal authority to the entire transaction. And of course, as we discussed earlier, again with SAA, for example, we again in this bill, we also deal with conversion of Infraco into a public company. Again here, I would also just want to highlight that members may appreciate that the the ICT sector itself is very dynamic. And so obviously you would want to create as flexible a company structure as possible. And as Cornelius explained earlier, the main object of Infraco will be to provide affordable broadband access. And again, as a public entity, the PSMA applies to Infraco and therefore its foreign powers will be subject to the PSMA. The major difference with the Infraco bill in comparison to the South African Express bill, for example, is that in this bill we then deal with what are called servitudes. servitude are essentially rights of way over somebody else's property. So, for example, if I own property and let's say the chairperson wants to erect a cable or wants to put certain infrastructure on my land for his services or products, whatever he would be providing to his company. Instead of acquiring my land for various reasons, he would then get what is called a right of way, which gives him access to my land and to put and then erect certain infrastructure on that land. And that is so that is essentially what a servitude is. It gives you access to somebody else's land, and you can then define the extent of that servitude, whether it's just access or it's access to put certain type of infrastructure, what infrastructure that should be, and you know, the extent of the land on which you would put that infrastructure. And the reason we also because, as we explained earlier, Eskom and Transnet had already laid infrastructure on land, they also have these servitudes, and it's not as easy to get servitudes because, as you may appreciate, the landowner charges you for that access and for whatever it is that you put on that property. And it's not a really, so it can be quite expensive because obviously limiting the landowner's rights to enjoy and use that property as he or she wishes. So there is a premium attached to a servitude. And specifically also servitudes to erect infrastructure are not very easy to get. So they're quite a prime commodity, if you will, for lack of a better word. So with the transfer then of the FSN assets from Transnet and Eskom into Infraco, it was also necessary then that Infraco gets access to those assets because they're already sitting on other people's land, and also then is ensured that they're going to be able, should Infraco also then need to extend the network and the infrastructure that has already been deployed, they also need to have the ability to do that. Now, the reason we're dealing with it in legislation is because servitudes are what's known as their common law right, which is they existed before the Constitution and without any specific legislation. And these servitudes that they have are what's known as personal servitudes, which means that they can't be transferred, which means they're attached to the person to whom they've been given. So you can't just transfer them. But if you want to extend them, for any reason, then you can only do that through legislation. And that's part of the reasons why we've dealt with them in this bill. And also, to put it in context, the servitudes obviously originally also related to Eskom's electricity infrastructure, obviously because, you know, that's their primary service and that's what they needed the servitudes for. And therefore to extend them, because as I said earlier, that the nature and extent of the servitude can be defined by the landowner and the person who has the servitude. So in order for us to then extend them to communication infrastructure, we then needed the mechanism of legislation to be able to do that. And the way that, because also Eskom was able to extend them for communications infrastructure through the repealed Telecommunications Act, and that right in the Telecommunications Act that gave them the ability to extend the servitude was not carried into the new Electronic Communications Act, which Cornelius referred to as the ECA. So there was a right they got under the Telecommunications Act that allowed them to extend the servitude to enable them to build communications infrastructure on the land that they already have access to, but that right then wasn't carried into the new legislation. So then we needed the mechanism of this bill to also to be able to do that. I'm not really sure, Chairperson, what happened with the drafting. It could have been one of the things that slipped through when the ECA was being drafted, because we weren't involved in that process really. I wouldn't be able to say.
Because there may be a deliberate reason why they left it out. See, that's where volume control was very helpful, because they served in communication, we could help on the business. But Eric, can we note that we just want to know the reason? So the next time we read to them, they'll give us an explanation. So if there's a deliberate reason that they left it out, then we have to take that into account. We can't just, do something when another committee passed legislation very recently, just like while I'm at this conversation, I also think we need to alert you about whether you're in the House before, that you must be very familiar with the ECA, the Electronic Communication Act, because you constantly refer to it in the bill I brought to you last night, and you need to know what that really is.
And the Company Act as well.
The Company Act.
Not a rapist data.
Just also want to point out on that, then, Chair, that these servitude rights also generally do accompany the infrastructure companies. For example, even Telkom would have had servitude access to rights of ways and that kind of thing. So it wouldn't be peculiar only to Infracorp. And so then I'll be discussing then the servitude, as you will see from here. And okay, the bill authorizes Infracorp to exercise all the rights that are attached to the FSN. And it extends Eskom's existing electricity servitude to electronic communications. And we've created a mechanism in the bill that Eskom and Transnet, as well as Infracorp, can, through agreement, agree to use, for Infracorp to use those servitudes for electronic communication network services to fulfill its purpose and mandate under the bill in its founding documents. And with Transnet, the situation is slightly different because Transnet, with respect to the FSN assets themselves, Transnet does not have servitudes because the assets already sit on land that is already owned by Transnet. So then what we would need for Transnet is Transnet to register the servitude in favor of Infracorp. So Eskom doesn't own the land on which its FSN assets sit. It already has servitudes from third-party landowners to use their land for their electricity network, but it needs to extend it for electronic communication services because currently those servitudes are limited only to electricity. And Transnet owns the land, so then Transnet would be the landowner from which Infraco acquires the servitude. I don't know if you want me to stop there.
If I hear you correctly, Transnet owns the land because essentially we're talking of the land where the railway line is going on, and that's where the fibers are going, it's on the land itself. Whereas Eskom has got a pipe going through my yard. That is what we're talking about when you're talking about. And I don't want to scare people now. You know, most people start hearing about expropriation and right of access to your land. I mean, it's essentially, it is the lines that are there, and it is the electricity lines that we're talking about.
And, I mean, I think also for the public, the advantage, at least, of going through legislation is that because it legislation is a public process, so at least the public can then make comments on all these. But as I said earlier, this is not unique in any way. And obviously, Infraco would have to pay for the servitudes that are also registered in its favor and for costs that attend to the extension of those servitudes. And whatever compensation then Infraco has to pay, that must be in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution. So that's the check that we're putting in the legislation, so that, you know, we're not running off.
Can I just say that it may not be unique in normal circumstances, but I think it's unique to our committee because I don't think any of us have come across in that in this perspective. So perhaps there's more impact. We can get more information on this.
And again, the bill then also has provisions that allow the minister to expropriate land on behalf of Infraco and pay compensation as contemplated in the Constitution. Now, the check that we've put in the bill firstly is that whatever expropriation, whatever compensation must be paid for any servitude and for any land that is expropriated, that must be in terms of the Constitution. The Constitution defines, exactly the nature of expropriation power and how those should be limited. And secondly, the second limitation that we have in the bill is that the land must be reasonably required for public purposes. So InfraCorp must show the minister that it reasonably requires the land for public purposes or in the public interest, and in addition to that, that the requirement is so that InfraCorp can then attain its objects under the Act and its founding legislation. So we again limiting you know, the expropriation powers as far as possible, and we're using obviously the mechanism of legislation in the Constitution to do that. And then again, in addition to that, InfraCorp must then be able to show the minister that InfraCorp on its own was not able to acquire that land on reasonable terms. So it's not enough that it shows that it needs it for public purposes, for public interest, and to acquire its objectives. It then again, there's a step further that it must show the minister that it wasn't able to acquire it on its reasonable terms, and then whatever compensation will be paid will be, again, is going to be in terms of the Constitution. I'm highlighting that just to show that the expropriation powers are limited within the legislation itself. And then again, on expropriation powers of the minister, what then happens is that once the land has been expropriated, InfraCorp becomes owner of the expropriated land after it has fulfilled all those that criteria I listed in the previous slide. And then it will pay whatever fees, duties, or charges that relate to the expropriation as if it had bought the land and the land was not expropriated. And then it must refund all costs incurred by the minister in expropriating the land. And then, in addition to that, the provisions of the Expropriation Act, which are largely relating, which largely relate to the procedure for expropriating land, will apply also in this case. Again, the, you know, within the parameters of the constitutional provisions that relate to compensation for expropriated land. And further, whatever rights have not been registered that relate to the expropriated land must be dealt with separately. And we emphasize again that in assessing the compensation that is payable, that such assessment will be done in terms of the Expropriation Act, and that again we use the key principles of the Constitution that that application must ensure that it's just and equitable to do so. And then again, because we previously I had stated that part of the purpose of the bill is to allow InfraCorp to be converted into a public company, because we're cognizant of the fact that we may bring in private sector partners, we then limit the expropriation provisions to say that the power to expropriate applies only as long as the state is the majority shareholder in InfraCorp. I think, I don't know if there are any questions just on that.
Chris? I just want to find out the chapter 7 about the expropriation of land there. Which minister expropriates, is authorized to expropriate? Is it the land affairs minister or the public enterprise?
In this bill, the Minister of Public Enterprises, because the expropriation powers are not limited only to the Minister of Land Affairs. Other ministers may exercise those powers, provided that obviously the rule of law applies, that they will be limited, that they, such powers will be exercised in terms of the Expropriation Act, applicable legislation, and obviously the Constitution.
Can I just check quickly on to what extent is this going to affect the operation of InfraCorp? For the existing network that you had, has all these been taken care of? Or in future, are you saying whenever you lay a new cable, are you saying half the chance that you're going to get to this kind of situation where you need to utilize this particular station?
Currently with the existing assets, not looking at expropriating land at all, because we're going to be using the existing servitudes and the assets already sit on also land owned by Transnet. And I also don't think for any immediate extensions of the network that we would be looking at expropriation of land. But this is this mechanism really is intended to provide flexibility in the event, because also we're dealing Infocom is going to be operating in a very dynamic sector and industry, and I mean, and you appreciate that the technological advances they're very rapid, and there may be a need to constantly lay additional fiber or extend the network using whatever technology is appropriate at the time. So this really is also to introduce a flexible mechanism, taking into account that it may not be as easy for Infraco to acquire the land on reasonable terms. Hence, I mean, what we'll try to do is limit those expropriation powers as far as we possibly can, and the primary mechanism we're using for such limitation is law, is legislation and the Constitution itself. So the major parameter will always be the Constitution. So currently, we haven't envisaged that for the immediate extension of the network, it would need to expropriate land, because also it would have to show that it cannot acquire the land itself, you know, and that it reasonably requires it. So this is just really a future mechanism, should it be necessary.
Thanks, Jefferson. Just on the issue of unregistered rights related to the expropriation of land, what could those be? Which would be expropriated separately? I don't have a sense of what kind of unregistered. The second question, Chair, is I'm trying to understand the. Even though I am not sure, in fact, I do not know what the provisions of the Constitution say regarding compensation. But I'm trying to understand as to what would really, assuming that these resources would be coming from the same kitty, if you assume that a state-owned enterprise is wholly owned by the state, and the SOE that would be needing those servitudes would also be owned by the state, and at the same time they would be subjected to provisions of compensation as contained in the Constitution. Even though I do not know what the contents of the compensation in the Constitution say, but I would assume that it would be more directed to such compensation as it would relate to privately owned property or something along those lines, not necessarily on situations where the state would be owning the property, but at the same time whoever would be needing usage of that space or land or property would also be the state. Why would you then subject the state to do the same thing to the state itself?
The protections really surrounding expropriation are for third party landowners, because this land that may be expropriated will not necessarily be state owned land. We don't know, you know, what land that would be and who would own the land. It could very well be privately owned land. So we do, and I think the rationale for the protection, the constitutional protection, really was to protect third party landowners. And that is also part of the rationale there, is to protect third-party landowners. So even when you go back to the servitudes that Eskom has, even Eskom itself, those servitudes relate to somebody else's land. And Eskom also, even in extending or those servitudes or having extended rights registered, it will incur cost for that. And those costs that would come out of its own pocket So obviously they've said, so far as they do incur those costs, they think that Infracore should compensate them for such costs. But for the large measure, these provisions are really intended to protect third parties. And does it answer? Or in the other unregistered rights, again, because we don't know what that land, who owns it, where it would be, the unregistered right, for example, could be, because not all servitudes would be registered against the title deed of that land. Because, as I said, because servitudes are also, they have a very long history. And in some instances, some have been, especially when you deal with personal servitudes that are attached to a person, some of them get registered and others don't get registered. So sometimes you find that there are rights that are sitting around that haven't been registered, which is why even the whole expropriation process is quite a long process, because then you need to conduct extensive discussions and consultations to know exactly what rights are attached to that land. And that's really, those are the kind of issues, those are the kind of procedures that the Expropriation Act also then would deal with.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to make an observation. According to the bill that we have in front of us, servitudes might be required for railways, transport roads, etc. And if we take the hard trade into account, all the court cases that happen to be as a result of the roots of the hard trade, we must consider that in future this can also lead to court cases where it should be proved in the court that this broadband infrastructure is to the interest of the public. So I just want to make an observation that it should be handled very carefully to limit it unnecessary court cases in the future, because we know how much land will be if you have to build a railway line or a new road. Because it's been said it can also be for power stations, etc. So I just want to make an observation, it is not just a bill, but there might be a lot of consequences in the implementation at the end of the day.
Yeah, can I suggest something? I think maybe we all follow on slightly off the track, because I think when members think of corporations, people might be thinking about taking down the houses and building a thick gable, but that's not the case. So I think perhaps will be in the public briefing will be nice, or in hearing that, just to show some light as well, realistic examples exactly what happened in such cases and what might happen in the future. Very good.
Thank you, sir. On your previous slide, you indicated that the borrowing power of Infraco depends on the scheduling of the TFMA. If I remember correctly, last week in the Houghton School, scheduling of the Infraco was one of the most contentious issues, particularly between the department and Treasury. And Treasury apparently cited a number of risks, recommending that Infraco would be better if it started as an agent instead of a standalone state enterprise. The second question, I just want to find out if that is the situation at the moment, meaning Infraco has not yet been scheduled, whether it should be or is scheduled in the PSL. On the second question, if I may get a little.
What's your question on that, Eric?
The first one is whether Infraco is scheduled, will be scheduled as 3D or as 2B in the TFMA, because what we were informed about was that Treasury has a problem scheduling Infraco, wanted it to be an agent. The second question, if I may, that's a little. Relates to the licensing of Neotel. One of the questions that came out last week was that Neotel will be given the privilege of selling directly to the consumers for a period of 4 years. And it was not clear whether after that 4 years, Nufraco will take over, selling the product. But I want to, because another issue that came up was the electric communication act. So we were not, it was not clear what role the EPA is going to play, and whether Nufraco will take over after that period of 4 years. So that is the second question. Thanks.
Slightly more complicated to what we
are. I'm saying slightly more complicated, the issues around 2B, 3B and 2. And I don't think it's so much about departmental differences. It's about issues around borrowing powers and so on. So I think insofar as it might be misunderstood, I think as a chair I have to clarify. I don't think it's clear that there are interdepartmental issues around this at this stage. The committee doesn't have sufficient knowledge of that. There are people within both, let's say, departments who have differences of views on it, presumably. These are issues that are being discussed. All we are saying as a committee is that whether it's 3B or 2, it is for the executive to first come with a proposal. So let it be misunderstood. There is not like, it's like people are brainstorming it and there isn't clarity, Eric, is what I think that came up. And we should also understand that in an autumn school, the idea there is that we brainstorm. And the idea is, like, for example, I, let me switch it off in case the General Secretary of the Communist Party is listening.
I would say, what about the monies? I would say the DA. I hope it's appropriate for you, Monica, coming to the House and say, but I said, the portfolio committee of the House school say, the idea of the House school, as I'm referring to, is we don't get bridges, as you might say. Let's get the other. I'm not going to come to the house and say that you know the opposition. I think it's a great topic. And I only want to give clarity on that.
To clarify this. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is that I think people shouldn't literally take things out of an intellectual discussion and translate it into the Open Portfolio Committee, because I'm not going to be held to account for what I say in my individual capacity in a closed autumn school. I think, Eric, you get the drift. Yeah. So let's the question really is, as I understand it, because they're co-chair, the question is it 3B or 2? And when is it going to be resolved? I think you answered that to some extent, but just repeat that. Thank you.
Chair, if it's all right with you, what I'd like to do is I'll give I'll lay the foundation, an initial response on the scheduling, and Lita will add, and then I'll come back again and deal with the licensing and the ECA, and Cornelius will also add to that response. But with respect, you'll see I put up slide 7 again, which states that part of the purposes of the bill is that the InfraCo's borrowing powers will be subject to the PFMA. Now, I just want to emphasize this point. The PFMA applies to all public entities in the country, whether it's an agency, whether it's an entity like Eskom or Transnet, whether it's the PIC or Fentech, for example. To the extent that they're public entities as defined in that Act, the PFMA applies to them. And the purpose of the PFMA is to regulate public finance and the borrowings of public entities. So to that extent, the PFMA applies to all to the borrowing ability of public entities. Now, when it comes to the issue of scheduling, you would look at what kind of entity are you establishing, or what kind of entities, what role is it playing in the market. Therefore, what kind of profile do you want it to have? Do you want it to have its own balance sheet? Do you want it to rely largely on the National Revenue Fund? Because also what the PFMA is also guarding is the National Revenue Fund. And that's where the issue of the scheduling then comes in. And that's what the whole issue of public finance is. So I do want to emphasize this point.
I want to emphasize, underline, highlight, the PFMA applies to all public entities and it regulates their borrowing powers. And the scheduling goes to policies and financial policies of those public entities.
So what I wanted to add was that I think, Eric, you must understand this discussion also within the context of the need to review some aspects of the PFMA. And as a department, we have raised this issue because the PFMA, as it is currently written, doesn't allow for a mechanism for one company to move from a Schedule 3 to a Schedule 3, which is what we've identified as migration. It's an issue because we recognize some of the points that National Treasury has raised, is that even if you are a Schedule 2 entity that uses its own balances to go and borrow, if you get into serious trouble with your lenders, the national fiscal is affected, whichever way you look at it, even if you haven't got the money from the national fiscal, you know. So the national fiscal does have a point in terms of the risk to the national fiscal, you know, because even if you didn't have an agreement with national fiscal, on the details of your borrowing, but you're using your balance sheet, but by the fact that you're a public entity, the third party has a recourse to the state in terms of its own funding. So I think that's where they're coming up. They're coming from, and we agree with them on some of those risks. And they're saying they become much more pronounced in an entity that does not have a history. You know, it's a new entity and so on and so on. So you cannot be comfortable that its conduct in terms of financial management and systems has a good history because it's new. So, I mean, they're raising some of those issues, and we agree with them. However, one of the issues that we've raised for the discussion to actually consider is that it becomes much more complicated in a company like Infraco, which is operating in a dynamic market. Because by virtue of going for a particular schedule, it attaches a particular procedure that you have to apply. And we're saying in the case of Infraco, you might at a particular point be looking at other private players coming into the picture who may not want to be subjected to the bureaucratic processes in government, etc., etc. So I'm just saying, Eric, the chair is right. There is no difference on the issue. But the issue is how do you manage it within the existing framework of the PFMA? And we have raised the issue with the minister, and we think that it can be resolved for the purpose of the deal.
I think without belaboring the point, the issue is we're making quite significant intervention as a state, and it does impact exactly on how we manage those interventions and the entities that come out of that. Now, on the licensing, the ECA, the Electronic Communications Act, it applies, the Electronic Communications Act is set up to regulate the ICT sector. It previously what you had was the Telecommunications Act and the Broadcasting Act, and those were the acts that regulated telecommunications and broadcasting respectively. Now, due to convergence of technologies within that sector, there is one legislation that now regulates broadcasting telecommunications, and that is the ECA. So the ECA would then, that regulation would then take the form of licensing, for example, communications infrastructure, whether it's for telecommunications, which is transmission of voice and data, or whether it's for broadcasting. So in order for any entity that operates in the ICT sector to operate, it requires a license, and that license would be granted in terms of the ECA. I mean, that's really just a sketch without really going into the details because it can get quite detailed. So the ECA will apply to Infraco because Infraco is operating in the ICT sector and it is acquiring assets that are regulated by the ECA, and that even within Eskom and Transnet would have required a license. And that's really just the broad general picture for that.
I think we get the idea of missing on Uzok. Given the time limit, I think we should leave this until if there's any question in the public hearing. But let's just continue with the rest of the slide.
Mr. Chairperson, let me just deal with the issue of NIATL and exclusivity and things like that. I think it's, I think that was the second question that came up. As Ursula said, the key salient points are that Infoco will eventually be licensed under the ECA. Now the important thing to basically understand about that is that we are a little bit in a grey period at the moment, because even though the Telecommunications Act and Broadcasting Act have been repealed, the existing licensees that are all licensed under the Telecommunications Act have to have their licenses converted to the equivalent of an ECA license, and ICASA is underway with that process. I suppose the key issue, without belaboring the point or going into details, is that the deal or the arrangement that is on the table between Infoco and Neotel is that Infoco will commence services immediately, even though it is unlicensed. It can do so because it is standing in a subcontracting relationship to Neotel. The Neotel license granted under the Telecommunications Act allows it to appoint subcontractors to provide infrastructure and services to it. And then the other piece of it is that the heads of agreement that were put in place between the organizations really state that Infoco will provide services to Neotel on an exclusive basis for a period of 4 years or until such time that Infoco is licensed under the ECA or is required to be licensed under the ECA.
Thanks. Can we continue?
And really this is the last slide that just sketches the implications of the bill, at least basically stating what we're seeking to achieve through the bill, which is for government to have the authority to acquire that infra for shareholders. And then again, because of the nature of the infrastructure and the industry itself, we then have those special provisions that deal with servitudes and expropriation. So the bill is different than from other bills that were brought before Parliament. And again, because we want to retain flexibility in the company, and particularly the COIS funding, and I think this applies quite strongly to a company such as Infracore. We want to maintain as much flexibility as possible with the funding of Infracore. So there is a provision for conversion into a public company. And those are really just the key implications of the bill. And that's the end of our presentation.
All right, thanks. I think because of the time I've already expired, can I just end my thing? I think I'm late with that urgent issue to clarify, otherwise the issue is going to come up in a public hearing as well.
Thanks. The reason is because we still have to look at the program quickly, and we also have this study group to attend to. If you look at the program, now, you see here again, the committee secretary is so abreast of time. He's made all the amendments that flowed from the Auckland School. Thank you, Bonari, really. It's great, really great. But now there are things that are beyond his control. Now, for example, let's go to Wednesday, 6th of June. We can't have the public hearing, so can you remove that? And we do what Peter suggests. We actually get in South African Express on the 6th of June. But I also think we carry over this debate and we start going to the bill clause by clause. I say this because I read the bill last night. And it's difficult bill to process it. I mean, the language and so on. Very technical. I'm not saying you can do it simpler, unlike the Transnet Pension Fund. We did it for you. That we could do. But I think this bill is by its nature technical. That's different, you see. And we will probably be very similar to the final version. But I think that we should start breaking it clause by clause. So on that Wednesday the 6th, we get an input by SA Express. We carry over the issues from here, which is why the co-chair decided to call it to a halt as well. And we look at go through the informal process of clause by clause. Then on Wednesday the 30th of June, I want to ask members, and Eric in particular, are there outstanding issues in the autumn school that we thought we should slide in here? Well, what about getting South African Airways? That input was so wonderful. and we hardly explore that. You know, Mukesh, and can they come? We agreed we will do that. Or can I confer with people and suggest if we don't find, or even if Renee has some good ideas. But Wednesday the 13th, we either have SAA, that input that we hardly pursue. This is a very... Alright, so we'll do either, good idea. Either we'll do that or we'll go to visit PBMR locally. Okay, because you can only have the morning off if you have to negotiate with us, and that's too tiresome. Wednesday the 20th, we have public hearings. Or shall we make it Wednesday the 27th to be safer? Well, I know you're acting in good faith. There's nothing shaking your head.
Sorry, Chair, I don't know if I should raise it here, but that internal ANC process is taking place that week, the 27th of June.
You should. It's in every newspaper in the country, the policy conference.
Yeah.
It's not underground. It's not underground. As I understand it, the ANC is still legal. Is that right?
Okay. Chair, I mean, like in a week, and I love to...
We'll do it for the 20th, the public hearing. Okay, that's it. Well, let's go to the next quarter very quickly. Now, normally we've allocated this for study towards the first 2 weeks of August when we come back, okay? Now, here I'm not ready to take a final decision, but there's a possibility of visiting two countries in Africa now that we've got a new secretary. I think this can be done. But my problem is that I unfortunately, I'm just not available to pull it together. Now, to remind members, Peter and Rissa is like the minister with our portfolio in our committee, at least. So he's also the minister of arrangements for study tours. Now, we are handing it over to him to think about for 24 hours whether he will pull it together with Bordani. We want to visit two countries in Africa that have fairly similar issues as ours. That's one option. Option two is we've also been invited somewhere else, but I don't know whether that's possible to do. So, Thursday, 2nd August, we got Infraco, Wednesday the 1st. We could do the study tour in those 10 days, 7 to 10 days, first 7 to 10 days of August. Can we mull over that? Peter, you got any response immediately? You want to think about it? Okay. That means you will take responsibility for it. No, I'm not doing it. I can't manage. This thing is too much work. I just can't manage. Okay. Then, apart from that, I have nothing further to say. Have members got any ideas what we should slot in that we haven't? Will I? Sorry? So we can't finalize the bill. That's nonsense. Oh yeah, we decided to put remuneration deadlines on the 15th, right? Can we review all that depending on when we gain and so on? Okay. Anything else? No. Thank you. The meeting is closed. The study group meets for 10 minutes. Thanks. Bye.